It's Friday, December 18th, 2015, and welcome to episode 184 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
Yay, Cindy's back.
Yay.
Missed you last time, Cindy.
Glad to be home.
Today, I thought we would talk a little bit about some semester break things. We're all extremely happy. Today's the last day of the semester here at EIU.
Yeah, it's the most wonderful time.
So we're going to be looking at finishing up this semester and talking about some of the things that we're going to do. And the name of this episode is Rest, Renew, Restore, and Rejoice.
Perfect.
So we're going to talk a little bit about how we plan to do some of those things over semester break and hopefully encourage you to do some of the same things out there. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And we've got a couple of technology picks of the week, as usual. Mm-hmm. And then...
Of the week.
We've always called them of the week.
I never caught that before.
Let's see. This is episode 184. Actually, you want to know the backstory to that?
Yes.
It used to be Technology Picks of the Week. We used to do this every week.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, whenever I started 8-9 years ago.
Wow.
So whenever I was doing the copy and pasting, you know, from one blog episode to another, I just left it there.
With it?
Because literally, I mean, you are all getting the most up-to-date information as of Friday, December 18th, 2015.
That's right.
Because my tech pick, I think I just found out 2 days ago or something. So
it is the tech pick
of this week. That's right. So it works out in the end.
It does.
So we'll go ahead and do that and then share some of the things. And then, as I say, hopefully have a chance to unplug and unwind a little bit over break. So we'll challenge you to do a little bit of that as well. So sit back, relax, and here we go. We're back, and the title of today's episode is Rest, Renew, Restore, and Rejoice.
Yes.
As we are now officially on semester break.
Woo! Yay!
So what are you going to do over semester break? And we're going to talk about a few things and throw out some ideas about some of the plans that we have. And over Thanksgiving break, I shared on the last Tech Talk for Teachers episode that I actually unplugged for the majority of the holiday break.
Good for you.
I had never done that before.
Was it hard?
It was a little bit hard.
Did you have withdrawal? Was it kind of like when you quit smoking and
it's like constantly reaching for the phone and things and, you know, turning off the notifications. It for the first couple of days, it's like, I'm missing something.
Yeah.
But that quickly went away.
See, okay, that's, going off topic here because that's just how my brain is working now that we're at the end of the semester. But... why is it so hard to start good habits and so easy to start bad habits?
It's just human nature.
It's like, doing things like that are good for us takes so much effort.
Mm-hmm.
But then getting into a habit of checking our phones every 10 minutes was so easy. It was effortless.
Mm-hmm.
But then to do something good for ourselves, it seems like
it's just those ingrained patterns. And as you say, habits of the mind, habits, just the muscle memory and things, everybody, especially our students, you see them walk out of class. First thing they do, reach in their pocket
Absolutely.
Or their purse, whatever, pull out their phones and check for messages. But anyway, so we really encourage everybody, if you haven't ever tried unplugging, I mean completely unplugging.
I'm taking that as a challenge.
There you go. And I would challenge for, let's say, 2-3 days.
Okay.
Just that much time. Like I said, it takes the first couple of days to kind of stop it.
Right.
And then the third day, and then I actually did it for 5 days last time.
Then the sweat, the cold sweats
yes,
will
it goes
go
away.
Away.
It goes away. But what I found, and it goes into this renew and restore piece of today's episode, was it frees your mind. It puts you in a different state of mind. And I don't know. I've just had so many creative thoughts. And so many projects, and that's the downside. Well, if it is a downside, I think it probably could be considered an upside, certainly. Mm-hmm. But I want to go. It's like, I want to do this. Well, what's the first thing you do? You go online. I want to do some research on this. So, you know, just kind of in just in that constant connected state. But what I found being unplugged was, you know, just forget about all of that and just let your mind go. And your mind's working, you know, unconsciously.
Absolutely.
On whatever you're thinking about. But, you know, I did feel a lot more rejuvenated. And I'm looking forward to, you know, the Christmas break and repeating the experience and things. And then lastly, it's to rejoice, you know, spend time with your family and friends over the semester break and, you know, really, really spend some quality time with them. And then I saw another thing, talking about being back plugged back in on my personal learning network. Another good challenge out there, speaking of challenges, is to, you know, take your phone or a recorder and mm-hmm. record family members, especially if you have older family, older generations and things. You know, with your primary sources and things. Mm-hmm. I know that you have a lot of resources and things out there. You know, you'd be surprised just kind of coming up with just a set of basic interview type questions and then just you know, have open-ended questions like any good interviewer would have.
Well, or even just, you know, if you're the whole crew's getting together for a meal or something, to sit down and talk about what you're eating and let everybody talk about their favorite foods. And mm-hmm. those are almost always connected to memories and stories. Mm-hmm. And that, and so it's like, you know, something, because I always thought, I want to put together, you know, digital books are so easy, mm-hmm. a cookbook, because mm-hmm. there are certain things certain members of family
Absolutely.
Always bring, mm-hmm. and it's like, man, I would love to have those recipes and a picture of that person, and,
right.
so, you know,
right.
and that, so yeah, this is kind of an opportunity to do those things.
And that's one thing that we've done, you know, taking pictures or scanning in images or taking pictures of the recipe cards, you know, grandma's recipes.
Yeah.
And having the handwriting,
yes.
you know, that's another lost art.
That's awesome.
With, you know, where are students going to be 20, 30 years if they don't teach handwriting?
Cursive, right.
The cursive handwriting. And I know a lot of schools.
That's going to be the foreign language requirement.
It might be. It might be. How are you going to interpret all these chicken scratches that we used to do?
Oh.
But, you know, I have mixed feelings about that because I just really do think, and maybe it's because that's the way I grew up, you know, pen and pencil, and and I use it as a thinking tool and the doodling and things, and it's a hand-mind connection that there's certain, you know, certain pathways that are developed.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I just read an article about that, and kind of brings me to a, you know, talk about the rest and renew. I've got a couple of books on my reading list. You know, the research saying, are we going to be robbing our children from some of those early pathways? In the imagination and things, mm-hmm. like, you know, another conversation.
Skipping those steps.
Exactly. You know, we're going, you know, typically today we go from, okay, we're going to teach something and we go directly to the digital.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've lost all that analog, the, you know, the doodling, the handwriting and things, of course, with tablets, you know, with the digital inking and thing. That's why I'm such a fan.
Right.
You can do a both and. You don't have to give it up. You can do both.
Right.
But just take it to the digital realm, but still have that physical hand-mind connection. Out there that I think is so important, and what happens in child development, you know, during those windows of development,
mm-hmm.
when those, you know, those connections are being made for the first time, and will they suffer in the, you know, in the
right.
future?
Well, even in our middle and high school students, in that we talk about it, the importance of just annotating,
mm-hmm.
but actually, you know, either having it on the iPad or some tablet, they can circle it, but having the paper copies to highlight and to physically engage with what they're learning, it
mm-hmm.
just adds this whole other level to the
mm-hmm.
learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, they can read it and they can see it, but by actually having them just circle or
mm-hmm.
underline or highlight, you know, you just
right.
take it to the next level, and it's not that hard. It doesn't take
right.
that much time, but it engages their body and their mind.
Right, it's that multimodal Modal, input
yep.
that we're always talking about all the time, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and mixing all three. You know, nobody,
yeah.
no two people learn the same, so... and we all kind of have our preferences.
I color code.
Do you?
And so just being able to highlight in different colors.
I do too.
Oh, makes a huge difference in how much deeper I learn
right.
something.
For the deeper learning and deeper
mm-hmm.
meaning and mind mapping and things.
Heck,
if you take
yeah.
something, you know, from the text base, start drawing freehand, drawing your arrows out there. Color coding and, you know.
Put a big question mark by something that you don't have a clue what it means
mm-hmm.
or you want to learn. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and what you're doing, you're, you know, making those notes more concise, taking it into a different format, reprocessing it, you know, making those multiple pathways again
right.
Out there for, you know, for recall. And just from practical experience, I mean, anytime I want to learn something, I'll just reach for a pen and start drawing. And then, as you say, I do use colors a lot too. The other thing, another challenge out there is renewing. And I just picked up a book. This one is a little bit older. I think the copyright's 2012, but I was looking for some different books and recently attended the Most Likely to Succeed video that currently going around K-12 circles especially. And there was a showing down at West Frankfort beginning this month, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I went down there and watched that. And, of course, there's a book called Most Likely to Succeed. And one of the co-authors is Tony Wagner. And he also wrote in 2012 called the book's called Creating Innovators. So it's looking at that, you know, the innovator mindset, which is really big right now. Mm-hmm. You know, education just kind of goes in these little cycles and pendulum swings things back and forth. And the Most Likely to Succeed movie was largely about project-based learning in the hands-on and kind of throwing the curriculum out the window and just let the students do the creative thinking, the, you know, the four C's.
It's terrifying, but it's cool, right?
Right. And then, you know, there is not the answer, and that's kind of in summary of that movie. Many kids do learn that way. Many students learn that way, you know, hands-on, just, you know, free reign. But there is still a need for guidance. And, you know, how do you fill in some of those gaps and holes? Because we all naturally inclined to go with what we're interested
right.
in. But sometimes you do, and this is what college is great for, you need to go out there and explore because, again, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And I think everybody that's been to college can probably tell an experience like I took a classical music course one time. It's like I had no interest at all in it. But by the end of the course, it's like you discover a different, you know, a different love.
Right.
And you look at something a little bit differently. It's like, oh.
Or even if you've got a book that you read, you know, in high school or something, and then if you read it now as an adult, it reads completely differently, what you get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always so cool. I've got when I was in fifth grade, a teacher gave me a copy of a book called The Little Prince.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that multiple times every year, and it's changed. The intent or the meaning that I draw from the book has changed as I've aged and had children and, and everything else. And it's like,
well, it's a worldview, you know.
It is.
It's how much, you know, as your worldview changes, you interpret things certainly differently, which explains a lot about humankind.
Yeah. I remember taking weather and climate in college and just being like, oh, this is the worst. Now I would love weather and climate
same
class.
Same thing with history. It's like, oh, this is so boring learning these dates and things, but it's fascinating today. In fact, that was almost one of my picks. I love reading biographies and things too, autobiographies and, you know. There's a couple of them, James Madison and, you know, some of the founding fathers and things out there I'd like to go read, but that requires an extended time. Those books are really thick, too.
Yeah.
So, there's, you know, there's always something out there to learn new. That's what's fascinating. Keeps you young, keeps you renewed, and go out there and, you know, learn some things and apply it to whatever, you know, whatever occupation you're in today.
And it's fun when we get to pick.
Yes.
What we read.
Yeah. And again, in this innovator's mindset and things, that's a key.
Choice.
High tech, high choices, huge for motivation and things.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're going to do better in things that you, you know, that you're interested in.
Yep.
Last time, missed you on the last episode, but I did that. One of the books I read last time was Moonshots in Education. So again, it was largely toward that project-based, you know, motivational, let's pick a project that, you know, with student interest and things out there. So
very cool.
One book leads to another, so you
it
know
does.
Who knows what will be on the bookshelf next time. I just want to talk a little bit about this experience because I think you and I are different about it. I downloaded that Moonshots in Education on my Kindle and read it from there, and I largely do that because of the convenience factor, and I'm just amazed that, you know, you can go out to Amazon, pick whatever book, and you know, one click buy. It's
right.
too easy. It's way too easy to buy. And then literally in less than a minute, you're reading that book.
Right.
This time, went old school.
Yeah.
So, and again, I encourage you, if you have some time over semester break, there are these things called libraries. And walking down through the stacks, you know, the physical hard copy books, it's a completely different experience than, you know, what I experienced with Kindle books because, sure, you can go out and browse, you know,
right.
the different sections. But, you know, we've got a great library here at EIU. And just walking down to the stacks, going for this one particular book, and then start noticing, oh, well, here's another title. And mm-hmm. I ended up with four different books here. Here's another title I'm interested in. Yeah. You know, the libraries, the curation and things,
and
putting
those
things together.
And they have the library covers, not like flashy.
No, this is a hardcover book. So
Getting into the substance of it there.
But when I unplug, I'm not going to have that. I cheated a little bit because I did use that Kindle. It's like, you know, is that really unplugged or not? You can argue one way or the other. This definitely is old school. So if I don't have Wi-Fi or if I don't have electricity or whatever, which sometimes happens with big snowstorms around here.
It does.
You know, nothing like being snowed in. Literally, I'm snowed in where I live.
Me too.
You know, and then sometimes the electricity goes out. It's like, now what are you going to do?
Yep.
So you're good as those last batteries in your cell phone and your Kindle. So charge them up.
Well, and we were talking about the actual book and the electronic book difference. And I know, I absolutely 100% prefer paper and real books to electronic. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know I have diagnosed, I have adult ADD. I don't know if that contributes to it or if it's just my personal preference.
Well, I hear a lot of people say that about the electronic devices being distracted.
You know, and it's not so much even the books that have, you know, they're enhanced, HTML, you know, that have the links to the video and all that. I think those are amazing and they're awesome. But to really get something out of a piece of an article or something, I print it out and I get the different colored highlighters and all of that good stuff.
Well, it's a concentration factor, too.
It is. And I had two classes and we were talking about it this semester. And I was shocked because the majority of the students preferred paper real books to electronic.
Yeah. It's surprising how many. I asked the same question.
Yeah, a few said that the electronic gave them headaches and that, or were hard on their eyes, and physically they didn't like them. But it really shocked me because I thought I was old school, and they would all say that they preferred e-books. And actually, I was talking about changing textbooks in the class. And I'm like, would you guys prefer an e-book to a textbook? And they were like, no, I mean, maybe one or two each class said that they did. Everybody else preferred.
It'd be a real good research study.
It would be.
We need to throw together a survey and put that out there. I think we would be surprised by that.
Of course, I'm assuming, that's me naively assuming they're going to read it either way. But
But
optimistically.
Part of that's the predisposition of the way that we grew up and the way that we learn.
Right.
You know, because, you know, you and I are approximately the same age, and we've gone through this analog to digital transition, which, you know, I look back as a gift because today's, you know, students, they know no different. It's always been digital to them.
So we've kind of experienced the best of both worlds.
Yes. And I think going forward, even for the digital generation today, it's still, again, a both and. You know, it's not one or the other.
Right.
There's a place, I think, for both of them. Now, in defense of the e-books, you know, you talk about these habits and things, the habits of the minds, and, you know, it usually takes like 30 days for a habit to become instilled.
Right.
And, you know, I have read many, many, many Kindle books out there, so it becomes secondhand, second nature to me. But I will say the one thing that I will miss reading this book is Pinch and Zoom.
Oh, yeah.
Or how do I change the font size in this? Luckily, it's fairly large, and I think I'll be able to get through this one. But you kind of laugh. But that is a big consideration today anymore. You know you're old when you go to the bookstore. It's like, how big is the font?
Yeah.
So, and, you know, we don't even think twice about it in electronic format.
You're right.
So.
Oh, my gosh. You can pick the, you know, how bright or how dark the background is.
Yep. And, you know, for certain special needs and ADA accessibility and things, all of that's built into these electronic devices to give you choice, because some people really do read better on a black ground with the bright, and some people the opposite. They prefer, you know, they talk about the eye strain and things like that. Again, that's just a digital affordance that, you know, electronic format can provide that we don't necessarily have with the real book. And then largely, you know, in my world and teaching and online sharing and everything, going digital just allows possibilities that the physical realm just won't, you know.
Right.
It's like, here's a link, you know, go out and download.
Exactly. And that's, I like, you know, the
convenience.
HTML enhanced, whenever you can talk about an interview or something and you can link to it and they can actually watch the
and
interview.
And see the actual person speaking. Or,
like an autobiographies with musicians and bands, and then they have footage and you can click and watch.
I included a couple of JFK speeches in the last Tech Talk for Teachers for the primary sources. And again, you know, just thinking back, I asked one of our students the other day from the St. Louis area if he knew who Jimmy Connors was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know who he was.
I do.
He didn't know who he was.
He
didn't. And the only reason I thought that he might know is was he was born.
Tennis.
Yeah, he's a famous tennis player from the 70s, 80s.
And so was the student from the Metro East area?
Yeah. And it's like, no, that's a, you know, and that's a good lesson for us as teachers on prerequisite knowledge, because sometimes we make the assumption, well, you know, maybe from that area they might. We're always constantly looking for these ties and the prerequisite knowledge, but it was a very good reminder that our prerequisite knowledge is not their prerequisite knowledge. So we, you know, that's a challenge of teaching, especially when you've got 30 individuals out there that you have no idea the background.
Well, and you know, in my class, we talk about, because they're all from different content areas, and it's like, just because you love this content area and know that foundational information, don't assume your students will. And so go ahead, you won't insult them by reminding them repeatedly of some of those things, because some of them just didn't get it before.
Right.
And so.
Right. The mysteries of learning. So.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and wrap it up. Semester break, feeling a little bit more relaxed because all the majority of the work's,
winding down,
looking forward to the break. So again, I hope you all have some time to go out and rest, renew, restore, and rejoice.
Absolutely.
My technology pick of the week this week is a Chrome browser extension called OneTab. This one came about, I was having some difficulty using my Chromebook one night, and I just happened to make a tweet out there saying, you know, my Chrome browser crashed because I had like 20 tabs open. And the Chromebook I have only has 2 gigs of memory, and yes, I know you should be closing tabs, but you know how.
But you never know when you're going to need them.
That's right. But it started happening a little bit more frequently, and I just made a comment out there, and one of the people in my personal learning network responds like, have you tried OneTab? And it's like, well, no, I haven't. I've seen it out there a dozen times or so, but it's one of those things that, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. It's like you come out there, it's like, I'm having this trouble with it. So the options were, I could open a tab and then close it, which is probably what I should have been doing all along, or I could look for a technology solution, and it happened to be OneTab.
There you go.
And what OneTab is, it's real easy to do. I'll provide a link in the show notes, but you can have it installed on, and it works with Chrome. Heck, you can have it installed in your Chrome browser in like 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. You just go out there, and it's just an extension. Puts a little OneTab symbol in your browser bar, and whatever set of tabs that you have open, you know, whether it's 5 or 10 or 20, you know, however many you can do without crashing your browser, you click this little OneTab icon that's now loaded in your browser bar, and it consolidates them down into one tab, and then it gives an individual listing of each tab, and it has some additional sharing features, which is why I'm really interested in it. Because you can publish it as a web page and then share that link with your friends or your students. You know, here's a set of, tabs related to whatever subject matter it is that you're teaching. And you could email that or post it in a OneNote notebook, whatever, you know, whatever your source or your desire to learn, learning management system, whatever you happen to be using. And then it's just a series of tabs. It also has the ability to do a QR code. Remember, QR codes were big like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to do some experimenting with that here in the ITC. I've got a new bulletin board that we're going to be putting up, you know, the old style 4x4 physical bulletin board. But I'm going to be providing some professional development resources out there. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do a set of specific series of tabs in this one tab about a specific topic. And then students can come up and take a picture of the QR code. And it'll open that up. And then I'll also probably provide some off our main ITC page.
Now, and when you, because you sent me one, and that it has a little icon for the page, and then it shows the title. So is that the page title then that shows up?
Yes, of the whatever tab that you have in the browser.
So it's kind of cool because then you can see, you know, what it is. It's a little, as long as they have a good descriptive title.
Right. And when you click it, you know, there's an option that says share as web page. And when you do that, that's when you get the QR code.
Okay.
And then, you know, it says scan this QR code using a barcode scanner app on your mobile phone or tablet.
Yeah.
So if I post that out on the physical bulletin board and say, you know, we're doing some professional development on whatever application it is, you know, the students can go out there and have that resource. Or, you know, whatever you're teaching. I mean, I think of this as a per unit basis, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I use OneNote a lot like this, you know, within an individual page. Within OneNote, you can do this. But it's just so quick and easy. And the benefit for me and the whole reason that I even pursued this, one, the friend recommendation meant a lot because, you know, there's, you know, apps are a dime a dozen.
Right.
Now it's like there's just too many to pursue. So
right.
I really put a lot of stock in who's making the recommendation.
Yep.
So, you know, that's one. And then it did, you know, has currently solved that problem because it frees up some of that RAM memory that was being used in my Chromebook, which was kind of, you know, deficient with RAM to begin with. I don't have that problem at work because I have an 8 gigabyte desktop computer here, and you know I don't even think about opening however many tabs. But in a resource-constrained Chromebook, you know it did make a difference. So, but the more interest to me now that I know about it, I mean I've known about it for a long time, but I just didn't have that, you know, that hump to get over that use case.
And I'm thinking, okay, like for, you know, when you either the examples I'm thinking of are a bunch of articles, multiple articles, or primary sources, and that instead of saving them and inserting a link into a homepage, and that you can do this, and you have this nice little list folder full of resources.
Or, you know, you mentioned conferences. This would be a natural for conferences out there. That's really about, I don't use QR codes that much, and I really don't see our students using it.
No.
You know, I've done some experiments, you know, out here, and it's like, it's, you know, again, be interesting because QR codes, it's like, is that one of those technologies that's, you know, it's had its popularity, you know, a number of years ago.
Yeah. Well, because we did a poster presentation at the National Council of Social Studies Conference, and I made a postcard that we gave everybody, and then I made a web page with all the resources that were on our poster and we talked about, and it's like, okay, with this, we could put a QR code on there.
Mm-hmm.
And they could do it, or, you know, just that single URL.
Yeah. It's kind of your workflow and things. You know, if I get an email, like I sent you that email link, to me, that's just so much more convenient. You just click on the link.
Yeah.
I don't know. There are occasions, again, especially like at conferences, it's kind of nice to have those out there on a program. And now then, you know, with our Office 365 and the ability for PowerPoint Online and Word Online and all of those, you can link directly to those resources. So
very cool.
I'm going to do a little bit more experimenting, put that out there, you know, see some of the students' reactions to it, and, you know, see if it becomes a little bit more useful. Definitely for me, it's working. The whole reason to do it is to free up some of that memory, so that works well. And then I do think I'll be able to share this even, you know, within a OneNote notebook, you know, just provide these links. And then if you're, you know, if you're curious and you're using the Chrome browser, it's, you know, just do a search, or I've got a link in the show notes to it, but it's very easy to use. Okay. So what's yours this time?
Well, same thing. It's funny how we're always finding new things that we want. You know,
there's always something new.
And we talk about how, yeah, we just don't have time for anything.
Yeah.
We make more work for ourselves because we're constantly finding new things we want to do and implement and learn more about. And this is, it's not new. They've been around. But when I was at the National Council for Teachers of English conference, they had sessions that were Ignite Talks.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never been to Ignite Talks before. And it was so cool because it was just, you know, again, just this quick turnover of different topics.
Yeah, explain what were the limitations. I mean, I think you probably make it what you want, but.
Right. Well, you have basically you can have 20 slides.
20 slides.
You're only 20, and they're auto advance, 15 seconds each.
Yeah.
So each speaker has 5 minutes.
That's a very good way for everybody to get participation in there, not anybody hogging, right. You know, the microphone or whatever, going over time.
Right. And so you can choose a big topic and have superficial, you know, very surface level information, or you can choose just one thing and go deep on one thing in those 5 minutes. It's absolutely your own choice and that. But the slides are really, instead of being, you know, here's a bulleted list, this is 1, 2, 3, I'm going to read it to you. The slides are... or a support and background more so than the content. The speaker is where the information's coming from.
It's interesting what time constraints and, you know, just constraints in general do.
Because you if you have a, you know, big topic, you're going to pick just the really important part.
Did everybody talk really fast too?
So some did. The ones who were new to it talked very fast and that, and but the one you could tell who had done it many times because they were comfortable with it and they knew just to hit the high, and their slides supported what they said very differently than the people that are new to it that try and shove stuff on slides and give you as much as they can and that. So I think it's definitely a skill you have to hone.
Oh, it definitely is, you know, and you know, going through the doctoral program and things, I had some advisors just like, you need to be more concise.
Right.
You know, you need to cut it down. How do you say this in, instead of 3 pages, how do you say it in one sentence?
When I start a presentation, I'll have 50 slides, and I'll bring it down to 10, you know, or something like that. And so it's a process, and it's a learning process that you have to do. But they were just so interesting, and I thought, what a great way for students to present information to their peers, because 5 minutes isn't that hard. And they can really pick, and as an, you know, teacher, you can say, okay, this is your topic, and really help them out by making it specific, or...
I think you work harder, too, when you have that. You know, it,
those
I think
constraints.
To me, it's harder to do a 10-slide PowerPoint than it is a 50-slide PowerPoint.
And that, so,
not to mention sparing your audience, too.
Yeah. And so I did have some people do it this semester, and, you know, they said it was crazy, but they did it in small groups. And they said they thought it would be easier by yourself than in a small group because of the timing and all of that. But I'm working on a couple. I'm putting together, and, you know, completely contradictory to what the intent is. I'm putting one together as the introduction for an hour-long presentation that we're going to do at a conference in Florida in January. And I thought, okay, it's just going to be the intro. There's three of us presenting. It'll introduce each of us speaking, but then also introduce the content of what we're going to talk about. You know, that tell them what you're going to talk about, tell them, and tell them what you told them thing. But, you know, I'm going to get some practice with it.
You definitely need
by
practice,
using
yeah.
it that way. And then I thought, you know, maybe I'll even do that at the beginning of every class this coming semester.
Yeah, I think hand off a student, or, you know, have a student per class just kind of agree to that up front and say, okay, you know, we're starting
class. I'm talking about me doing it.
Oh, okay.
To introduce the content of what we're going to talk about. And like I said, that's not really what the creators intended them to be used for. But I think it's more intended to be a hook, to hook people into your topic and then encourage them.
I'm thinking here on the blended line, because mine, you know, how do we share these experiences and things out there to the broader audience and things? I don't know that I've seen. There's like on, isn't there an Ignite channel or something?
Right, and they have these huge conferences, these Ignite Talk. But they're all really flashy and pretty.
Kind of
and,
like a TED Talk.
Mini TED Talk. So they're very professional. They're very huge stages with huge, you know, projection and that. And so it's very different than real life. And so I'm going to try a few of them, see how it goes. And I think the auto timing is going to be a learning experience.
But I think that's very good.
I think it'll be good for me. That discipline that I lack will be forced on me. And that. So, yeah, so I'm gonna play with those a little bit this semester and see how it goes.
Okay, good. We'll have a link to look up the Ignite talks out there on YouTube, and I'll provide that link in the show notes. All right, thank you very much. And that wraps it up for episode 184 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. If you have a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rett.
Happy holidays and keep on learning.